Okay, so the name of the story is called Come Back Yeller. The trigger warnings are animal abuse and not safe for work. Years and years ago, back when I was a young girl, my dad brought home what he called a dog, but it barely qualified. What's his name, Dad? My dad stared at the little fellow with ugly indifference. The dog, cowering in the corner, was a mess of hated and mangy. Life had chewed him up and crapped him out. "I don't know," Dad said with his Miss Weston drawl. "Shithead?" Underneath all my dad's anger and meanness, I think there might have been once a kernel of goodness. But somewhere along the lane, he broke, and I got lost. He was from a poor Okie family. He watched his mom get beaten to death by a boyfriend with a cast iron skillet. He served in Vietnam and took part in some massacre rivaling My Lai. He became prisoner of war for years, losing his leg due to some gangrene after stepping on a shit-smeared punji stick. I think my dad's meanness was a symptom of something that he couldn't help. Something that was unfixable. But it didn't excuse him for being the despicable monster that he was. As early as I could remember, my dad trained me to protect myself and fight back with guns and knives and, if nothing else, my bare fists. I was homeschooled. I never left the house. He booby-trapped the place in case it got ever invaded by one of his boogeymen, but his traps also kept me inside. He taught me where the traps were so I didn't lose a leg, an arm, or an eye, but he never taught me how to disarm them, so I never left. The traps, the constant emphasis on self-defense. The world was a villain. My dad wasn't one of the good guys. And he was just as much as a victim as anyone else, at least in his own assessment. My attention went back to our new dog. "Shithead isn't a very nice name, Dad." "Watch your fucking mouth, Sue." I saw him glance at his clenched fist as I tucked my chin, waiting for an explosion of pain. As I said, I was sorry, but instead of hitting me, my dad took out his frustration on the dog, and it whimpered. "Could we come up with a new name for him?" I asked later that night. We were eating TV dinners and watching a sitcom like we always did. "We'll call him Yeller," said my dad, "like the name of that dog from the movie. I watched it with my kid brother a few years before I shipped out." My dad had been talking about Old Yeller, the 1957 Disney classic. It was a depressing yarn about a beloved yellow lab named Yeller, who contracted rabies when protecting his family from a feral wolf. No happy endings. The movie wraps up when the protagonist blows off the dog's head with a rifle. Al Yeller didn't even have yellow fur, though he might as well have in my dad's eyes. Suffice it to say, from an outset, that dog's life was destined to be dark. We kept Yeller in our dirt-floored basement, only taking him outside occasionally to sniff the grass in the backyard. He would whimper, crawl around, and blink at the sun, and then would pull him back in. We lived far out in the countryside, far away from anyone who might have seen the abused creature. But my dad still went to great lengths to make sure that Yellow didn't escape. "What kind of life is it for a dog to live in a basement, Dad?" I asked him once. My dad kept him chained there. He refused to let him upstairs on account of his unwashable filthiness. "That cellar is a better home than that mutt deserves," my dad replied. "Should have shut the fucker as soon as I found him." Yeller subsisted on a steady diet of wet food, with occasional leftovers from our dinner, if my dad was in a good mood. Yeller turned his nose up almost at everything that we gave him, but hunger would eventually set in, and he would eat. I felt sorry for Yeller, so I spent most of my free time in a dirt floor basement, reading to him, even though he didn't understand a word of what I was saying, feeding him candy, even though it made his teeth rot out, and doing anything I could do to think of to cheer the old dog up. Yellow's health deteriorated over the years, and so did my dad's. About 10 years after we got Yellow, my dad contracted syphilis from a prostitute. He never believed in going to the doctor and had zero trust in the medical community. He thought the government was trying to poison us with FDA-approved meds. So, slowly, he slipped into insanity. And that was when I got really scared. Neurosyphilis has various side effects. Extreme headaches. Lack of coordination. Sensory defects. And eventually, dementia. Violence dwarfing any I'd seen throughout the rest of my childhood was commonplace. It was like my dad was possessed. He threatened me regularly. One day I went into the basement to find him pointing his military-issued Colt 45 at Yeller, rambling about some horrible thing from his past, blaming Yeller even though he hadn't even been there. I talked my dad out of shooting Yeller, and then I realized saving Yeller from my dad and his incredible wrath had to have happened that very night. My dad and I sat in front of the TV, as we always done, eating Hungry Man microwave dinners and watching some show neither of us cared about. Dad droned. He stared, his haunting 1,000-mile stare, looking past the TV screen towards his hellish past. As Dad's cognition and motor skills continued to deteriorate due to neurosyphilis, it eventually got to the point where his eyes crossed permanently, and I mean, actually crossed. Towards the end, he was like a demented clown or a hulking monster, but one that looked so ridiculous he was almost a caricature, albeit a murderous one. Once, he was proud, one-legged, but proud. In the end, he stared at me with crossed eyes, mumbled out unintelligible words, stumbled about dizzily, and screeched and cried and prayed to his long-dead mother, and always, always carried his military-issued Colt .45 looped up and ready for action. "I should go feed Yeller," I said. The creature that had once been my dad grunted, and I stood up with my tray and made my way towards the basement door. The old floorboards of our old house creaking beneath my feet, I opened the door and made my way down. Yellow was curled up on filthy rags that my dad had given him to form a rat's nest sort of a bed. He was snoring peacefully, the spiked collar around his neck keeping him fastened to the support beam that stood in the middle of the basement like a tree trunk. The key, I never knew where my dad kept it, so I went to his tool bench, got a hacksaw, and prepared to cut through Yellow's change. He startled when I went over to him. "Hush, boy," I said. I put the hacksaw's teeth on the chain near Yellow's neck and began pulling it forward and back. The metal whined and I sawed faster. "Hush, boy, I'm getting us out of here." The floorboards creaked overhead, but not too loudly. Just the sound of my dad shifting in his chair. A yammer of TV voices came through the boards. A sort of laugh track from my comical attempt to save the dog's life. I looked around the basement as I continued sewing. Tripwires ran underneath the windows, each one attached to a nail bomb. Parts of the dirt floor were carved out along the one way to another. The pits were covered with films, these rotting boards, because I'd helped make them. I knew buried in each pit were more nails, and they were angled upward, caked with yellow shit, not unlike the punji stick my dad had stepped on in Vietnam. Even if I did decide to make my way across that part of the floor, I had no idea what was on the other side of the door. I never had. The only way up was, the only way out was up, the same way that I had come. Yellow whimpered slightly. The teeth of the hacksaw finally bit through the chain. "Come on, boy," I said. Yellow scampered forward with surprising speed. I made sure to lead him away from the basement's various traps and towards the stairs. When we got up to the stairs, I looked up and I saw the devil. The creature that had once seen my dad stared down at us. His crossed eyes seemed to glow. His sizable body was silhouetted by the light coming from the first floor. The Colt .45 was holstered in his belt, and in his free hand, he held a rusty machete. "Careful, Sue," he mumbled, ropes of mashed potato froth hanging from the corners of his mouth. "That dog's fucking diseased. Go on and chain him back up." "We're leaving, Dad," I said. "If you care about me, if you ever have, you'll let us go." He stumbled forward on his one good leg. The decomposing prosthetic that served as his other leg seemed to bend underneath his weight. Remembering what little good times there were, the few times my dad ever said he loved me, I hedged my bets and I shielded yellow off my body and led him up the stairs. "We're leaving, Dad," I said. "Let us..." The machete blade came whistling through the air and I dodged right and the thing clipped my face. If I had a beard, I would have shaved it. "Get your fucking ass back down there, Sue." I charged past him. Yellow scampered along after me, barking at my dad as we went. I led Yeller forward, getting out of the house would only take all my skills my dad had taught me. Our front door was booby-trapped with another nail bomb. Only my dad knew how to disarm it when the solicitors came calling. The back door was locked, bars running over its windows, with more bars running over the kitchen windows as well. I heard the sound of that machete whistling and ducked instinctively. It missed me, but hit Yeller, cutting off his front leg at the joint. Yeller howled, I pulled him forward. He kept his balance of three good legs. "Fuck you, you fucking bitch. Leave them let be." Yeller and I ascended the stairs to the house's second floor. More bars on my bedroom window. My dad's room was the last option. We ran down the hall, my dad galloping along behind us, smashing into the walls and shattering old picture frames. We got to my dad's bedroom door and I opened it. The first thing I saw was the window. It wasn't barred. While Yellow slunk towards it, blood pouring from his ragged wound, I pushed a dresser in front of the bedroom door. I'd never been in my dad's room before, but in that short time that I was, I noticed things. Like jars and jars upon a field of amber-colored, dehydrated urine. 100 empty bottles of gin or more. My dad had drunk entire juniper forests, traps half-finished lining the rooms, guns in every corner, enough to wage a small scale war. I turned back to the door. Right in front of my left eye, an inch away, the machete blade sliced through the wood, bringing my attention back to the moment. I fell down. My dad began pounding against the door and shaking the dresser. And then, a series of slow motion gaps blasted through the wood, followed by the report of the Colt .45. Through one of the bullet holes, my dad stared at me with his crossed, bloodshot eye. And for the first time, I noticed that his once blue iris was becoming milky. The neurosyphilis was making him blind. "Open up, Sue," he said, his voice suddenly calm. "I just want the dog, is all." "We're both leaving. Open up, you little bitch." A bull's rush, the dresser tipped over, my dad crashed through the door, falling to the ground. He looked up, but not before Yellow was onto him. Yellow had launched across from the room, baring his rotting teeth and biting into my dad's neck. He pulled back, shaking his head like a terrier killing a rat, the tendons and veins of my dad's neck ripped free, sending sprouts of blood gushing in harmony with the dying beat of his heart. I'd seen scary movies before. Though Yellow continued to tear at my dad's throat, though he was good as dead already, I reached forward and grabbed the Colt .45 and I steadied my aim. Sue, my dad gargled, but I ignored his pleas. Killing him would be a mercy. I aimed between his eyes and I pulled the trigger. I watched as his head exploded and peace descended on the bedroom. I got my dad's key from his corpse, and I used them to unlock the back door. Using the skills my dad had taught me, I created a tourniquet for Yellow's leg. I helped him into a car and then I drove. I had no idea where we were going, just that it was somewhere far away. And as I drove through the countryside, Yellow slept. Eventually, he woke up. I realized he had to use the bathroom. After hunkering down and peeing in the frost-caked wheel stubble, he came back to me. "Fengcha Mele Konkwe," he said. "I don't know, Yeller," I replied, guessing what he was saying. "Somewhere far away, we'll get you help, I promise." "Tataura," he said. "You're hungry, boy? Is that it? Well, we'll get you some food then. There's bound to be a restaurant somewhere. I don't have any money, but we can find some scraps. There's always a dumpster in the back." "Takam Hong Chung Me," he said. "Sanmei Fan Kui Bat." "There, there, Yeller," I said, patting his head. "We'll get you some help." But then he was gone. And with speed I couldn't even begin to comprehend, Yeller took across the field on free legs. I started running after him, and then I realized that I'd never catch him on foot. I got back into the car and I pulled forward and immediately got stuck in the dirt. The wheel spun fruitlessly as I jammed the pedal down. "Yeller," I screamed, my words trailing away on the morning breeze. "Come back, Yeller." Years have passed since the horrors of that night. I've done a lot of thinking, truth and reconciliation, processing my disturbing childhood with God knows how many therapists. I've long since forgotten their names and their faces. You're probably asking yourself how, as a person with a brain, I didn't know Yeller wasn't actually a dog, but an elderly Vietnamese man that my dad captured and chained in our basement. Remember what I said about growing up in a booby-trapped house of a one-legged, war-scarred father whose brain was rotting from the effect of untreated syphilis? The father who drank unfathomable amounts of gin and pissed into jars and storing them in his bedroom? The one who threatened me at gunpoint if I ever mentioned leaving? Well, it's not an excuse, but it's context. And I'll never forgive myself for what happened. But remembering that I saved Yeller helps someone with that shame. Now that I know the world of us now, I wonder how I didn't realize the truth much earlier on. I wish it had played out differently, but life didn't work that way. My dad brought the war home with him. All the dehumanization he saw, experienced, and took part in, it turned him into a violent, racist monster who was beyond help. He bears responsibility for what happened. But it's hard to fathom how getting sent into hell at 18 would have rot you from inside out. Things steadied over time, and I grew up in a variety of homes, attended a normal school, even attended college. Now I work as a bank teller. It's not exciting, but it pays the bills. And in the heat of a busy workday, I get a reprieve of the unsettling memories of my past. Yeller wasn't a dog. He was a man. A human being with a name that I'll never know. No one ever found him. But I hope that despite my dad's cruelty, and unlike the dog from the movie, he lived out the rest of his days in happiness. And that's the end of the story, called Come Back Yeller. There's some story notes attached here by the author. I'll read them out now. The author says, "For this story, I thought author's notes were important. When it comes to horror, my mind tends to go to transgressive. I violate morals / sensibilities as violently as possible to capture attention. Sometimes I do that with extremely sensitive subject matter, like the story you just read, if you're arriving here. Sometimes it's more of the fun stuff, to create white knuckle thrills. To be clear, the racist views espoused in that story are not my own. I actually ran the story by both my wife and my brother-in-law, to get their perspective on whether I'm a complete monster, because I felt so shitty writing it. They said I dealt with it artfully enough that it didn't come off as pure exploitation. I don't speak Vietnamese, so if others do, please weigh in and correct me. But what the man says at the end is this. Feng cha mal la con kui means your father is a demon. Fa tao ra means release me. Tao kom hon chung me, he said. Ta me va kui va means I hate you, he said. Both you and the monster. And that was a powerful moment for me. OP wasn't a hero. The story didn't have a happily ever after. The Vietnamese man was just as terrified of her as he was of her father. The love wasn't mutual and never could be, because the human being was degraded and objectified and tortured. The end made me wonder a bit about the nature of love, and of the inverse of what I just... degradation, objectification, and torture, consent, support, understanding, and compassion, etc., can wash out of some of the world's darkness. So here's to hoping. A little glimmer of hope never hurt anyone. A comment I read is, a POV character Sue's dad fought in the Vietnam War. One day he kidnaps an old Vietnamese man to torture as revenge for losing his leg in the war, hence the name Yeller. As in yellow, referring to the yellow-skinned men that we Asians were awarded when racists decided to dole out color as a classification. He tortured the old man and Sue, not knowing any better. And Sue, not knowing any better, being raised by a crazed psychopath, Oldish also treated him to torture, albeit not on purpose. Eventually, Sue realizes that it's wrong and frees him, after which she also kills her father, mirroring the theme of Old Yeller. The dog went insane from rabies. Her dad went more insane from syphilis. Because human beings are basically poor-built meat robots, and our glitches are way more terrifying. You guys want more explanation? There's another one. Explaining how he brought back a whole man. Someone asks, how did he bring back a whole man? And then someone else replied, kidnapping happens and there's two factors working for him. If it's an elderly person, especially one that doesn't speak English, if anyone questions him, he can confidently say that this is my father. He has dementia and doesn't speak English. I have to get him back to the nursing home before he hurts himself. Really, just the confidence is enough. Proven in documented IRL situations. But the fact that any concerned party isn't able to confirm makes it easier. For example, outing myself by this, all relevant parties are dead. My very white American aunt got my very Vietnamese grandmother out of a refugee camp in Guam when they weren't yet allowing transport to the US by telling the soldier it was her mother who had been helping evacuees and had gotten mixed in. She switched to only speaking French, and the silver believed them and let them out. The bystander effect. That's someone else's problem. That's not my business. I'm not involved. I don't have the whole story. I don't believe you. I don't care. Many IRL murders and kidnappings happen in plain view of witnesses who refuse to get involved. Adding in that having some minority trait, which isn't necessarily race, increases the bystander effect. Grandpa has this going against him. Old? And several studies done of elderly actors who feign heart attacks, people would keep walking by as the actor was in need of help. 2, doesn't speak English, not worth the communication barrier hassle. 3, Asian, can't say I'm being oversensitive anymore, COVID has made this one blazingly obvious over the last few months. 4, kidnapper is a big banff, derogatory in his usage, and that's a fight. 5, kidnapper is disabled and no one wants to be labeled a guy who kicked the ass of some old broken Viet. The event is seemingly set in the 80s to 90s, so no smartphones, no internet like we know today, and no real way of spreading around what you saw, or any recourse to save going to the cops, who also didn't have any resources, and probably would have laughed you out the door for such a ridiculous claim. You saw a massive hulking cross-eyed man with one leg kidnap an old Vietnamese guy and throw him in the back of his beat or jeep? What crack of brand new heroin are you smoking? Lay off the ganja and go waste someone else's time. Regrettably, this still happens all the time. There are still kidnappings and murders. People either don't care or don't get involved because of how they look or aren't believed when they'll go to cops. It's unfortunately not that unusual just because you're a good person and can't fathom hurting others. That was all the offer notes and also some comments. Yeah. That's it.